are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast with his family. So, you know, good for him. He's getting to meet Goofy and all the people out in Disneyland.
he's gonna fit right in with Goofy.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, I can agree to way. I mean, I think the thing that I need to focus on more is that there's so many Boston fans out there that I need to, like, pump the brakes on disgracing some of their guys. So I'm going to try to do that.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You're on mute. Or you're not here.
Sorry about that. I am on mute.
Because I screwed up, and in a panic move, I ended up drafting him, and now I'm biased. And so I kind of am convincing myself that I love Cam Broxton.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 236 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. And I'm not the normal host on Monday. As you probably know by now, Justin is not going to be joining us tonight. He is actually on vacation with his family. So, you know, good for him. He's getting to meet Goofy and all the people out in Disneyland.
he's going to fit right in with Goofy.
He will. He will. Actually, we've seen the photo and we couldn't like really... we couldn't see the difference between the two, so they were kind of the same guy. But with me, as usual, is our prospect guy, Matt Thompson. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Good, man. I'm surviving the snowmageddon. We're getting out here. Can't say the same for you guys, huh?
<'Cause>... No, it's not nearly as bad for me. I'm in Nashville. I'm a little bit south of you, so I'm definitely not getting hit with the snowstorm as bad. But
my brother's down in Nashville right now in a baseball tournament.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What kind of is he in high school?
College.
Oh, really? What college do you
He's
go
playing
to?
Down there. It's a junior college up by me. He's a catcher, starting catcher. If you want to go take a peek.
Yeah, we'll talk about it off show. I'll check it out. Anyways, our guest for tonight, I'm really excited about him, is from FanGraphs and Projecting X, Mr. Mike Podhorzer. Mike, how you doing, man?
No school tomorrow.
Or anything else.
Yeah, or anything else. You can't leave your house, man.
That's right. We're going to have a five-hour podcast tonight. Actually, make it 8 hours. We'll pull it all nighter talking baseball.
I'm always in for that. The amount that we record, I wouldn't kid around about that because we actually probably would do that at some point, just like a marathon, like a 20-hour marathon. It would be pretty bad. But...
So Mike, since you're going to be up in New York with all the snow, like, is it frowned upon to like order takeout for dinner and have people deliver it to you, or is that kind of like not a thing?
Like during the snowstorm?
Well, yeah, like, because, I mean, you got to eat still. Like, is it frowned upon to, like, I've always wondered kind of the ethics behind that. If it's, like, a big snowstorm, can you, like,
if they're open and they're willing to deliver, then it's perfectly acceptable. If they don't want to deliver, then they'll close down.
Okay, and I guess that's fair. I was kind of wondering what you do about that, especially in a big city, so...
That's part of the deal, right? Like, if you're open, you're open. It doesn't matter, like, what's going on outside.
Yeah. Well, they'll pull this crap where they're open, but they're not doing deliveries. It's like, well, then you might as well be closed because no one's coming to you. So,
I mean, it's just a waste of money on their part if they're paying their employees to just kind of stand around and not actually make any food. So either they're open and they deliver or just close up shop because nobody's coming.
Yeah, well, that's what I always wondered about that because, you know, you guys are supposed to get, what, 20 feet of snow, so...
Precisely.
Yes, some type of blizzard. Anyways, you can always please rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators. It really helps us out. Mike, give yourself a few plugs where people can reach you, what you've been working on nowadays. I know you have some really interesting things going on lately.
Well, you can buy my ebook, Projecting X 2.0, How to Forecast Baseball Player Performance, available on projectingx.com. And while you're there and learning about how to project players, perhaps you don't have the time to actually make all those projections for this fantasy baseball season, so you can also purchase my 2017 pod projections, also available at projectingx.com.
Awesome. Full disclosure, I actually, before I got into this industry, I purchased your first book. I still have it, actually, and you are part of the reason that I make my own projections every season. So bravo and thank you to you for helping me out with that. It's pretty nice.
Thank you, and you're welcome. And I believe, I'd have to check to be sure, but I believe I do have a quote from you on projectingx.com recommending the book.
Really? I definitely did recommend it. So I, you know, anybody that's out there that wants to or even has an idea of thinking about making their own projections, definitely check out Mike's book, because it's just like a really step-by-step way to do it. It was just really easy for me to consume. And yes, it is kind of time consuming itself, but it's a really fun process for me. It's something I love to do. And since purchasing the book personally, I find it like just a nice ritual every year just to dive into the player pool and get everything done. So, you know, everybody I think does things a little bit differently. But I think that the book is a really awesome tool to do. So anyways, we're going to be talking outfielder tonight. We're going to go through, you know, a few of the different, you know, kind of outfielders in the player pool this evening that I kind of picked out. And a few of them are specifically because you are on, Mike, because you're one of your most notable picks in the labor draft is one of the guys we're going to talk about tonight. So it's going to be really interesting. But I did want to just kind of talk about Ian Desmond really fast, since he is, you know, kind of a big guy in the news right now. He's going under the knife for surgery on his hand. He's having I think he has a broken second metacarpal, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know all the bones in people's hands, so, you know, forgive me if I messed up on the name. But anyways,
it's the finger.
Somewhere
finger. There.
He hurt his finger.
He has a boo-boo. But Mike, you know, with your projections and everything, how much have you downgraded Desmond to this point? Or are you kind of waiting for news to come out in terms of like how long his absence will be? Or are you just automatically kind of dropping him?
No. So this is how ridiculous my brain is that I actually memorize exactly how many games I reduce his projection.
Nice.
And I did this last night. I actually reduced his projection by 28 games, which, again, you know, random guess, but that's a little more than a month that he's going to miss. It's probably going to be more. I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out more after the surgery. I could always downgrade it more. I still have a couple of weeks going until the season starts. So those 28 games, I actually divvied out to both Mark Reynolds and Gerardo Parra, both of which now are very solid targets in NL-only leagues. Anybody, obviously, with a job in Colorado is going to be a good buy. And Parra is not just a first base option, but also he might start over David Dahl with his back injury. So Parra is coming off of a very bad year last year, and he probably will come cheap, and he's going to give you some nice profit potential.
Absolutely. I think Parra is the, you know, the guy that wins the most out of this. Not that anybody wins getting injured, but I think Parra, having a really bad season last year, this gives him an opportunity to at least, you know, guarantee some playing time for the first half of the year. Because depending on how the Rockies do, you could see a scenario in which they bring up, you know, they get rid of Reynolds, they get rid of, or, you know, say Desmond's still injured or whatever, they can bring up a guy like Ryan McMahon, they can bring up Raimel Tapia if they wanted, say Dahl is hurt for a substantial amount of time, even more than we think. We could see, you know, kind of some of the pieces move around a bit, but I think Parra, at least for right now, is a really nice name later on. If you don't mind me asking, Mike, what exactly, were you drafting Ian Desmond prior to the injury? Was he somebody that, based on your projections, was kind of fitting a lot of your draft strategy, or was he somebody that you didn't have projected as high as a lot of other people do?
I think he was fairly valued in terms of the labor league. So the issue is that I think he was a bit fortunate last year. I believe his BABIP was like a career high. And so moving to Coors, I think a lot of people thought, oh, he's moving to Coors, he's going to be even better. But the thing is, he was already facing regression. So all Coors was going to do is kind of stop that regression, and he was going to do something similar to what he did last year. But he's also in his early 30s. He's not really at a great age. And how many bases is he really going to steal in Colorado? So I certainly didn't think he was going to have a better year, but still, power, speed, Colorado, that's definitely a great combination. And I thought he was going to be a valuable fantasy player this year, but he didn't end up on my team in my one draft, luckily.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Ian Desmond with this injury? Was he somebody you were drafting beforehand? And B, how much are you kind of dropping him now based on this?
He was something I was looking at. He's a guy I was looking at investing in this year, just because I know he's not eligible at first base right now. But the first base pool is pretty shallow. And I think Desmond could have been used as a guy to kind of prop that up a little bit, because he's kind of a forgotten guy when you're talking about first baseman, because he doesn't have the eligibility right now. But I think with this trade, I hope with this trade and this injury and then the Dahl injury, I hope Raimel Tapia gets a chance. I think he's a guy I'd be scooping in L only if I could. He might go a little bit more, a little bit higher price than Parra and Reynolds, though, only because he's kind of got the pedigree attached to him and you're the big prospect and playing in the course field and all that jazz. But I think Tapia might be the big winner here, and hopefully that works out that way. I think Mike Reynolds could be decent in a deep end only. Parra as well. It's a good call by you guys. I'm really bummed about Desmond, though, because he was a guy I wouldn't say target, but I was definitely not afraid. Not afraid to invest because, I mean, obviously Coors Field, he's more of a gap guy, and obviously you're going to the field with the biggest gaps in the game. A lot of doubles here. He's probably going to hit 35, almost 40 doubles if he stayed healthy, but that's out the window now. A lot of those signings that kind of get trashed in the offseason, they always kind of tend to work out decently well. And I kind of thought he was going to surprise some people this year, but he still can. But I can't. The biggest predictor to injuries is injuries, and I can't draft an injured player that high this year.
Sure, I mean Ian Desmond and I have a love hate relationship. Multiple years ago, I was completely on the bandwagon, and then going into last year, well, really the year before, at the end of 2015, I was done. I was done with Desmond, and especially going into last year, I was absolutely done with him. He had a kind of a resurgence, if you will, but the last couple months he had 2 home runs and 4 stolen bases between August and September with a combined .247 batting average. I do think that Coors was going to kind of mitigate that you know BABIP regression a bit, but at the same time I wasn't thinking he was going to put up the same numbers as last year. So I think I'm kind of in the same camp as both of y'all. You know, if I'm drafting right now, I'm dropping Desmond probably multiple rounds, probably 2 to 3 is what I initially said on Twitter when I saw the news itself. And we don't know. I think 28 games is a good, you know, estimate right now, just kind of a baseline, but it could be longer. I doubt it will be shorter. And at the same time, you have a guy that, you know, obviously swings a bat. It takes time for somebody to come back with a hand issue, especially to hit for power as well. So I think that this drops Desmond a significant amount, but I do think there's a buying opportunity if it ends up going too far. You know, right now he's going, about 50th overall in NFBC. I think that if he starts dropping outside of the top 100, then there might be an opportunity to buy there. But it's kind of hard to gauge when you're not in any drafts and you don't see how far people are dropping Desmond based on this news. So let's go into the list. So the first guy on the list is Bryce Harper. He's kind of tearing it up this spring. A lot of people in the Nationals community are talking about now he's healthy. So, you know, he's going to put up the same numbers he did in 2015. Matt, what is your thoughts on Bryce Harper for this year? Is he, you know, where is he in your ranks? Are you back in, essentially?
No, not really. I like Harper at a certain price, and I think my price is like the end of the second round, beginning of the third round, and that'll never happen because someone else is going to be more aggressive there. There's a lot of variables with Harper. I mean, he ended up having a 2020 season, which was nice, but I think he kind of disappointed in the batting average category. I'm talking standard 5x5 here. If you play in OBP leagues, then you got to bump him up because the on-base percentage does provide a nice high floor for him because he's always going to walk. But I don't think he steals as many bags this year. I think he does. He probably hits some more power, but the batting average is a complete crapshoot. I am encouraged by the good spring as much as you, I guess you can be. I mean, you don't take too much stock in those. But that second half, man, the second half last year scared me. The contact percentage dropped. Had neck and shoulder injuries, and he had 21 stolen bases, but he got caught quite a few times. Wasn't really efficient on the bases. I don't think he does 2015 again, but maybe he goes back to kind of splits the difference between 15 and 16 next year, which is still a valuable player, but too much uncertainty to go in the first round for me. Even though my gut says he should go there. Obviously, in keeper dynasty formats, I'm still all the way in as you can, and maybe there's a teeny tiny buy low window here, but I doubt that. But I can't go first round pick this year, and that means I'll never get him this year, which is sad, but that's fine.
Mr. Podhorzer, Mr. Harper's BABIP last year was about .270. His BABIP the year before in his breakout was .370. What's your expected BABIP metric kind of telling you for this year on Bryce Harper? And what's the projection that you have for him? Because, I mean, we have such big, you know, differences between what he did in 2015 and 2016, and also prior to that as well, based on his health and all of this stuff. So, you know, where are you at with somebody like Harper right now?
Yeah, so Bryce Harper has posted a BABIP above 300 every year until last year. And his ex-BABIP was also above 300 every year until last year. His ex-BABIP actually slipped to just 274 which suggests he wasn't really that unlucky last year. He deservedly posted a suppressed BABIP, which is kind of surprising. So the real difference this year for him was that he was actually shifted 61% of the time. And that's not all that surprising, because lefty power hitters are often shifted an extreme amount. Mm-hmm. You just didn't really realize that Harper is one of them. That's because the shifting didn't start until 2015. He was only shifted 35.6% of the time, and then that jumped to 61% of the time, and he had a lot of ground balls into that shift. And when you hit ground balls into that shift, that's almost an automatic out, and that really killed his BABIP. Now, I'm thinking this is the kind of thing that is actually repeatable every year. If you hit it into the shift one year, you're probably going to continue to hit it into the shift, and you're not going to change. So this is a real risk. It's not accounted for in any of the projection systems. Nobody is talking about it, but my BABIP projection of 300 is actually below all the other expectations, and I think people are nuts where they're drafting him. It's almost as if last year never even happened, and I'm with Matt in that there's a lot of downside here, and given the price, it makes absolutely no sense to actually pay what it costs to acquire him.
He's just not a safe first rounder, you know?
No.
And I know he definitely, you said, Matt, that, you know, in OBP formats, he definitely has a higher floor. And I completely agree with that, because one thing he has done the last 2 years is walk, you know, 19% and 18% walk rates. That's I think, a really strong floor for him, because people are going to pitch around him a bit. But just in terms of safety and in terms of a first round selection, you always want somebody that's going to be reliable, that's going to have a good health grade. And Harper doesn't really exhibit any of that. He has been inconsistent. He has had health problems. And on top of that, I didn't even think about the shift thing, Mike, but that's an amazing point that, you know, I mean, if he's hitting into the shift 61% of the time and it's all ground balls, then yeah, I mean, I don't see the BABIP changing that much. Even if it fluctuates, you know, say up to 31, you know, or what, 310, that's still not a massive uptick in batting average. I'd say that puts him up in the 270 range, which is what he was essentially from 2012 to 2014. You know, I have him ranked as my fourth outfielder, and I think that that's just based on the fact that he has such upside that you can legitimately see a wide range of expectations for him. But what I do love about him is that I think Dusty Baker is going to continue to let him run. You know, Dusty Baker had the Nationals in the top five in stolen base attempts per game last year. I think Trey Turner is going to, you know, possibly make that even a higher amount per game. And Bryce, while he was unsuccessful a lot of the times, it doesn't matter for fantasy unless you play in like a net stolen bases league. So his speed score is still solid. It's not anything great, but I think that he can have somewhere around double digit stolen bases and hit, you know, close to 30 home runs. It's a matter of questioning how good the batting average is going to be and whether he stays on the field. So I think that somebody will always want to pay for the upside as opposed to the actual, you know, risk that is involved with somebody like Harper in the first round. I believe he went second overall in Tout Mixed, which is an OBP format, which I can understand a little more, but, you know, he went seventh in Labor Mixed, and I think that that's just going to be consistently where he goes. So
that shifting stat is fascinating to me. And he, you know, Harper, I'm not pretending to know him personally, because obviously I don't, but he strikes me as a guy that, hey, I'm not going to change what I am. I've been the greatest player on my team forever, and I have the highest ceiling of any player in potentially baseball history. Why the hell am I going to change? You know what I mean? I kind of strike him as kind of being kind of like that.
Yeah.
A little bit too stubborn, and that's an incredible stat.
When you think about it, though, think about watching Harper. How often do you see him hit the ball the opposite field with power? I mean, or really at all. Like, when I think about Harper and whenever he smacks the ball, it's always to right field. I never really, you know, I'm sure that he sprays the ball a bit, but just when I'm thinking about watching Harper, I never really see him hit for power the opposite way. So what were you going to say, Mike?
I was going to say that the vast majority of players, first of all, get their power by going to the pole field.
Sure.
But second of all, the trade-off these guys have to figure out is, do they really want to change their swing to not hit into the shift just to raise their batting average? Because that's going to cost them their power. So it's really a decision. Do you want to raise your batting average, go all Ichiro and get a bunch of singles, or is it better to hit fewer singles, have a lower batting average, but hit for more power? And that's not the same answer for every hitter. Every hitter really has to figure out what the best balance is that would translate into the best offensive performance.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's move on to George Springer, a guy that, you know, I think the fantasy community is just overhyped on. I think what he did last year was pretty much the only reason that he had a solid season was because he had more than 500 at-bats for the first time in his career. I think he was kind of a compiler, if you will, but I'm not very high on Springer. Mike, what are you thinking about Springer for this year? Is he one of your targets?
Well, the thing that scares me about Springer is that he's improved his strikeout rate from a really high rate to not that much worse than league average. And I'm questioning, is that really sustainable? Because he had major strikeout rate problems in the minors. Mm-hmm. And he looks to have gotten that fixed. I don't know how sustainable that is. But aside from the strikeout problems, it looks like all his speed from the minors has evaporated. He only went 9-for-19 in stolen bases last year. That means that he might not be running freely this year. And if you can't really count on him for double-digit steals, then he's not going to contribute in batting average. So he's really, a 2, maybe a 3 category guy if you include RBIs. But if he's hitting leadoff, he's probably not going to be that great in RBIs. So now he becomes a 2 category guy. He's a home runs and runs scored guy. And, I mean, it's good. I like his total package, but it's not great. And I think the excitement has kind of dampened on him just because the lack of steals. And I think some people were thinking 35, 40 home runs rather than 30. And he required 744 plate appearances to get to 29. And he's not going to get that many plate appearances again.
No. And I think that everybody just in the back of their mind has that 40-40 potential. And they think that that's something that can, you know, be within the realm of possibility for him in the major leagues. But I just don't think so. He never will be a batting average guy because, you know, the contact rate, while it has improved, it's stayed about the same the last 2 years. And that's equated to 276 and 261 batting averages. Not really. I mean, it's a little bit above average, but it's definitely not an asset. And the speed is not there. Like, he is not going to be a stolen base asset. I think last year was about as good as you'll see in terms of the power, because the home run to fly ball rate really wasn't different from 2015, where he hit, you know, 16 just in less at bats. But I just don't think that the speed's going to be there. And, you know, hitting on top of the lineup is nice, but the health is also a problem. You know, last year going into drafts, he was a top 20 pick. This year he's a top 35 pick. So, yeah, people are a little bit down on him compared to last season, but it's only about a round. You know, 15 picks overall is just not much. It's not enough discount. I think that you can get somebody like Springer anywhere in the draft, and I'm just not in for him. Matt, what do you have to add on Springer?
Yeah, I think you nailed it best when you said you kind of mentioned he was a compiler, because that's exactly what he was. And I think last year, this is kind of a hypothesis on my part, but judging by the stolen base percentages, and maybe he was trying to play through injuries and stuff, and kind of because he went 16 or 20 the previous year on the bases, and last year, like you guys said, 9-of-19, which is downright terrible. He strikes out a little bit too much. That would be a batting average guy. And my biggest thing is, I think the home runs are maxed out. You guys already mentioned the plate appearance total at 29, and he hits the ball on the ground so damn much, it's impossible for him to really improve on it that much. So, I mean, I think last year is kind of what you have to pay for. Maybe add a few steals, and I mean, I think he's going too high for that. I did sell him in a dynasty league this year, which I was kind of iffy about. I'm still in on him long term, I guess. But I'm not nearly as excited about him as I was when I acquired him in that league, because I thought he was going to be a stud, and I think he's just going to be a solid player. But he's pretty much a compiler, like you said. The walk weight's always going to be strong, so keep that in mind. Another OBP guy.
Yeah, that's very true.
But other than that, I mean, it's also kind of propped up by 11 hit by pitches too, so maybe not. But he's an interesting guy, but he's very, very impossible to predict where he's going to be. So. Health-wise, so I'm going to be out on that reason. I'm out, on that reason alone, I'm out.
Another guy I'm out on, and it might not be popular, is Christian Yelich. How about you, Matt? Why don't we turn it back to you? What's your thoughts on Christian Yelich for this season? Somebody that I think is getting a little bit of helium, and I mean, kind of rightfully so, based on what he did in the second half last year. He's got a great age. He's 25, but what are your thoughts on Yelich?
I like Yelich a lot, and then you and somebody else, I can't remember who it was, maybe it was Evan Peterson in our Facebook chat, kind of knocked me down a little bit on him. I kept coming at you with the stat. Christian Yelich, third, you would never guess this by looking at him, third highest average fly ball distance in the major leagues last year. That's kind of interesting. But again, I think he's I don't have the exact stat here, but I think he's the guy that the league leader in ground ball percentage for hitters. Is that right?
He came in second to Howie Kendrick among qualified batters.
Yeah, so I think expecting him to even hit 20 home runs next year might be a little bit of a stretch. I'm going to predict it because I'm aggressive on Yelich, and I love the skills. I mean, he's only 25. I mean, it's crazy. He's got a nice lofty ceiling. I just don't know how high that is. But he is a guy that I'm investing in this year. I think the speed bounces up a little bit more. Hopefully the power growth continues. 98 RBIs is real tough to project because I don't know if he's going to hit third again in the Marlins lineup if Stanton's around all year, so who knows what they do with that. Again, he walks a decent amount. So I'll probably be the only guy here, I'm going to guess, but I'm in on Yelich this year.
I'm very interested to hear what you have to say, Mike.
Well, it's funny because this is what has been a recurring theme for me through the years of playing fantasy. One year, I love a player. Then he actually does what I expect him to do. Then he becomes overvalued, and the next year I hate him.
Yeah.
Yep. See, I knew I'd be the only one. I'm on that island.
But
here.
It's not that he hates the player, though. It's the value. Keep going, Mike.
Sure. It's always the value. I mean, this is exactly what's happened. Will Myers, I was all over Will Myers last year. I drafted him in all my leagues. He did everything I could have ever hoped for, and now he's overvalued. Andrew Cashner, years ago, loved Andrew Cashner. He had the breakout, then he became overvalued. Didn't like him anymore. This is exactly what's happening with Christian Yelich. And in previous years, I was expecting a power breakout, but that power breakout, I was expecting to like 12 home runs, not 21. So the thing is what you guys hit on is that he just simply does not hit enough fly balls. And that 20% plus home run per fly ball ratio, there's no way that's sustainable. Yes, he hits the ball far and hard, but it's still not 20% plus home run per fly ball level skill. So I'm projecting a decline to 16% home run per fly ball, and that's going to drop him down to just 13 home runs because he just does not hit fly balls, and that's a real issue. I love everything else about his skill set, though. He's a legit high BABIP guy. If you look at his career BABIP marks, ready for this? This is going backwards from 2016. His ex-BABIPs, 361, 362, 363, 373. Hey, he's in decline, actually.
Yeah, well, I'll take the power. The home runs don't count, though. So,
because this is a guy that in his entire major league career has popped up six times. Six times entire career.
Holy cow.
That's insane.
Actually, five of them was in 2016.
It's because he's trying to hit more fly balls. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably.
And that was a career high last year. 20% fly ball rate, that was a career high. And, you know, you guys have pretty much touched on everything that I would go with. I mean, he was top eight in home run to fly ball rate last year. But he was also, had the second lowest fly ball rate or whatever. Obviously, very heavy ground ball tilt. I just can't get on board with a guy to hit over 20 home runs when you have that batted ball profile. Do I love the batting average floor? Absolutely. And I think that he is, based on those BABIPs, you know, and you're absolutely right, he's going to have a floor of somewhere around a 300 batting average. It might be, you know, fluctuate anywhere between like 285 and 315, but it's going to be in that range. And then on top of that, you're kind of banking on the Marlins lineup, and that's a complete crapshoot. If Stanton stays healthy and Ozuna as well, could they be a above average unit where they're like in the top 13 in runs scored? And that obviously benefits Yelich? Maybe. Yeah, I mean, that could happen. But at the same time, I'm not going to bank on that, and I'm certainly not going to pay a top 60 pick for it. Probably, I've seen him go probably in the higher or mid to lower 20s in auctions, and it's just – it's too much for a guy that I can't bank is going to hit enough home runs. And he hasn't been stealing lately either. You know, last year he had 9 stolen bases. The year before he had 16. I could definitely take on an argument that somebody told me he was going to steal like 14 or 15 again. How many stolen bases do you have him projected for, Pod Orzer?
I have him down for 11 and 4 caught. The issue is that his speed grade has been in decline.
Yeah.
And is now below average. He hits right in front of Giancarlo Stanton. He's not going to steal often. And he's a guy that when steals go down as you age, I normally don't expect it to suddenly rebound significantly. So he's losing his speed. His willingness to steal has declined. I just can't project a significant rebound.
Yeah, and I'm not projecting. I have him down for 8 steals, which is obviously a little bit less.
That's even less than last year.
Yeah, so, and I think that it's going to continue to decline a bit because I think as he matures as a hitter, he's not going to steal as much. I think they're going to rely on him in the order to be more of a run producer as opposed to somebody that gets on base and steals. They have enough stolen base prowess with somebody like D. Gordon up top. So until he's gone, I don't think that there's really much of a need to use Yelich in that type of capacity, so...
I think Yelich is like the prototypical number two hitter, and I think he's kind of miscast at the Marlins roster. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
No, when I play with him on MLB The Show, I play him at number two, so I'll just be...
Well, see, there you go. That's the verdict. That's
now, I'm the obviously the best possible GM in the world, so...
Fire Don Mattingly, hire Mike Warner in Miami.
Yep, that's what I would do. let's go to the guy that I'm probably the most excited about on this list, and I'm hoping that you say the same thing, Podhorzer, because I have a irrational love for Gregory Polanco. I'll start with you. How are you valuing Polanco this year? Have you ended up with him anywhere? Like, what's your thoughts on somebody like Gregory Polanco?
I like Polanco, and he's another guy that heading into last year, I thought he had nice power upside, just given my ex-home run per fly ball rate. And sure enough, he nearly tripled his home run per fly ball rate, more than doubled his home run total. And this is exactly what my equation had suggested he was going to do. So the only issue is that he stole 10 less bases. So he traded some speed for some power. He still only hit .258, so he's not really a high batting average guy. If we check over on the ex-BABIP suggests there's some actual upside here. 2 straight years over 300. He was at .323 last year. He did get shifted, but apparently not enough to scare away ex-BABIP. So I think he has some hidden upside on the batting average. I think he'll hit, let's say, high teens home runs. He'll probably get the steals back into the 20 range. So, I mean, he's a very possible 2020 guy. And I don't think he's that expensive. What is he going? 4th, 5th, 6th rounds, I would imagine?
Yeah, he's going as the 65th outfielder or 65th overall pick.
65th outfielder.
No, yeah, I know. Down there with Tyler Naquin. No, yeah. 65th overall. And I don't know where he went in labor, but I think it was somewhere around that spot too. So he's not getting too much helium as well. I mean, I'll say flat out, I would take Polanco every day of the week. Actually, if they were even in the same spot, Polanco and Yelich, I would take Polanco every day of the week because I think that he can be a 2020 guy. So. Matt, what are you thinking about with Gregory Polanco this year? Are you you all in or what?
I admittedly came into this. I know how much you like him, Mike. I was coming into this trying to rain on your parade, but did more like dove in to Polanco a little bit. I mean, I've seen him play a lot. Being a fan of an NL Central team, I see Polanco play all the time, and I always in the back of my mind, he hits the ball hard all the time. Like, and I looked it up. The line drive percentage this year spiked to a career high, 24%. The last 2 years, he hovered around 19%. That's a significant gain. 5% is nice. And I don't know if you read too much into this, but the Pirates' philosophy this year is looking to hit the ball in the air a lot more as a team. And I think that's good for him. Obviously, the home run per fly ball stuff is indicative of that. I think, like Mike Podhulzer said, the batting average is expected to be higher. At, you know, .258 seems like to be the low watermark. The one thing that scares me is after watching him play so much, he's a really bad defensive player. He kind of looks like he's like a deer out there sometimes. Like, he's got really long legs and doesn't really – and he plays with a little bit of a reckless abandon in the outfield. So I'm kind of worried about, like, the injuries a little bit with Polanco. But, I mean, obviously he has no – I have no reason to – if you look at the numbers, he's been nothing but healthy since he came in. But he has played through nagging injuries a lot. So I have a slight injury concern, but I mean, I guess I'm all in on Polanco, and I'm still probably not as much as you, Mike Warner, but I like Polanco this year. I wanted to do it trying to prove you wrong, but it came out the wrong way.
I don't know why you're implying that deer aren't coordinated, because I mean, they're pretty, you know, agile. They know what they're doing out there.
A deer on ice, I'll say that.
On ice? What?
Yeah.
You mean like slipping in headlights, around? Like the actual saying?
I don't know, like running around on the frozen pond.
That's not what
4 legs flying everywhere.
Like, get out of here.
Yeah, kind of.
Anyways, what I love about Polanco is, you know, if you look at his minor league, you know, track record, he always took a little while to adjust to minor league pitching or whatever level he was at. And he was always young for every level. But then once he got adjusted, he you know, surpassed any expectations, and that's why he rose so fast through the minor league ranks. He's only 25 this year. And, you know, what he did in the first half is what I'm really excited about. He had 10 home runs and 9 stolen bases through June with a .295 batting average, also a 12% walk rate. Then he got injured. He ended up having knee injuries, hamstring problems. And, you know, obviously, if you're somebody that steals bases like he does, it's going to present a problem for you. But Pittsburgh has been known to steal bases. Last year, they were in the top 8 in stolen base attempts per game. I think that there's a lot of batting average upside with Polanco. I have him penciled in for a .275 average. I know that's high. I know it's a career high, actually. But I believe in his batted ball profile. I also think that he's going to steal more than 20 bases. He had 27 in 2015, and I think the power is legit. I think he could hit more than 22 that he did last year. You could see him hit 25 to 30, and that's kind of what I'm buying him for. I'm buying him for the possible upside of – I mean, the best-case scenario is a 30-20 year. I'm not expecting that or projecting it, but I think that it's in the cards. Last year we had you on, Podhorzer, and I was praising Justin Upton, and I was saying that he could have a 30-15 year, and I'm kind of the same way with Polanco, but I'm a little bit more sure of it than I was Upton last year. Let's just hope I'm right.
Let me just throw out one more stat on Gregory Polanco, and maybe we'll see if you change your love fest.
No,
for him.
Don't even. I don't even want to hear it. If it's negative, no, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
All right, we're looking at X home run per fly ball, which is driven primarily by barrels per batted ball event, which is a new Statcast stat from the heavens. 2016 barrels per BBE 6.2%. 2015, 6.1%. How can that be? His home run per fly ball ratio went from 5.5% to 14.4% with the exact same barrels per BBE and a home run per fly ball, an X home run per fly ball, going from 10.8% to 10.9%. What am I saying? He was the exact same power hitter.
Yeah. I wonder if we can split it by halves. I've looked on that. You know, I'm assuming you're on Baseball Savant. Is there a way that you can split it up by, you know, first and second halves?
I don't think so, because I think the barrels per BBE is not. It's an overall stat. You can't like create it yourself.
Gotcha.
So I don't believe that you can do date ranges for those. But it's funny how 2015 he was unlucky. 2016 he was lucky. And the X home run per fly ball is essentially right in the middle of those two numbers, which is what I'm projecting for him this year is 11%, right at the X home run per fly ball rates.
Well, if you also look at his batted ball profile, he started off at 50% in ground ball rate in 2014, and it's dropped all the way to 39% last year. And then the line drive profile, like Matt already mentioned, was a career high 24% last year. And then the fly ball percentage also has risen from 31% in 2014 to 37% now. So, you know, if you take out the fact that he was the same player, which I love the barrel stat, so I'm not going to go against that. If you take that out, just his natural progression in terms of his batted ball profile is trending towards better power numbers. So, I mean, the thing for me is, like, if he stays healthy for a second half this year and puts up the same numbers that he did in the first half last year, then I think that that could equate to the upside, which, you know, I think could be 25, you know, plus home runs with, you know, 20 stolen bases. I don't know. I might be a little, like I said, I'm irrational about Polanco, so I apologize in advance. Let's move on to a guy I'm not irrational about. It's Matt Kemp. I don't know how much time we want to spend on this, but he's a top 100 pick. I'm absolutely out. How about you, Podhorzer?
He's so boring.
Yeah, he is.
And why did he just decide that walking was kind of against his religion last year?
Yeah, it's not good.
He kind of decided like, that the year before, too, didn't he?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I thought it was lower. It was 5.4% last year. He probably picked it up a bit. I owned him last year. I remember early in the season, he like had very, very few walks. It's like, well, you know what? If you keep hitting home runs, I don't care if you walk or not. Just keep hitting the home runs. But he's old. What is he? He's 32 already. And he doesn't have a very good lineup. He doesn't hit for batting average. He doesn't steal bases anymore. He's not exciting. He's a guy, if he's undervalued, fine. I'll draft him, but not thrillingly.
Sure. I don't have a lot to say here. He's going to hit home runs. But Matt, yeah. What are your thoughts on Kemp? How about this? Would you take somebody like K-Riss Davis, who's going behind him, ahead?
Absolutely.
K-Riss Davis.
Absolutely. Yep, and Bautista too.
Odubel Herrera, Lorenzo Cain, Steven Piscotty. I mean, yeah. So
every one of these guys. Yeah. Kemp, for me, he's a one-category guy, and that's home runs, which, yeah. And he also, you know, with the history of Matt Kemp, although in the last three years he's played 156, 154, and 150 games, but, he, you know, he's got the injury label from 2012 and 2013. The lack of complete lack of stolen bases, complete allergy to ball four, it's not a profile I typically go for. I played a lot of OBP leagues anyways, so he's not completely off my radar. In all those, he's gone. And I just, players that don't walk have such a lower floor, so I'm out on Matt Kemp, and I don't see a scenario where I'll ever be on a Matt Kemp again, to be honest. But
yeah, sorry. I agree. It's the health, to be honest with you. And I've been somebody in the past, you know, I believe in 2014 and in 2015, I was a Matt Kemp apologist, somebody that was kind of rooting for him, but. You know, for this year, you're paying for what he did last year. And, you know, that was only the second time he hit over 30 home runs. He did that on 623 at-bats. And that's actually a career high when I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's a career high. So can you pencil in a career high in at-bats again? Can you pencil in a career high in home runs again? Or the second highest amount of home runs he's ever had again? I don't think you can. And
definition of a compiler. Definition of a compiler.
Kind of. And the draft slot is just, it's insanely bad. There's so many other guys going behind him, just in the outfield crop that you could take. So anyways, let's move on from Matt Kemp, because I'm getting a little bit sad thinking about it. kind of going the opposite way, a young hitter that came up last year was pretty impressive, especially for how young he actually is. Matt, let's talk about Nomar Mazara a little bit and what you think you can expect from him for this year.
I love Nomar Mazara long term. It's crazy how young this dude is. He's going to be 22, I believe, opening day.
Yeah,
I think he's 21 right now. I worry this year he gets platooned a little bit because, I mean, he struggled against lefties last year. Yeah, he's only 111 at-bats. But the thing that worries me is he slugged 270. Complete lack of power against same-side pitchers. But he still had 20 home runs last year and 516 at-bats, which is, for, again, 21-year-old. And a lot of his home runs were straight moonshots. I think he hit one of the longest home runs of the season, if not two of the longest home runs of the season, if I remember correctly. The walk rate for someone his age is acceptable. The complete lack of speed is a little bit worrisome, and I don't think it ever comes. So that's something that you should be aware of. I kind of think he's a little bit underrated, though, right now. I said all that stuff kind of negatively about him. His ADP is around the 200 mark, which I think is a steal. I think he's in the 45 to 50 range for outfielders, which I think, again, is low. But there's also the bottom could completely fall, and he could spend the majority of next year in AAA. I can see that's an equal possibility of him being great, because, I mean, they have DeShields Jr., and they have, like, Ryan Rua. Joey Gallo eventually has to get playing time somewhere, right? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in Texas, so I think, again, the floor for Mazara is nothing, because he could get sent down to the minor leagues. But I also think there's a little bit of upside here against righties. I think I could see him, if he gets enough at-bats, approaching the 25 home run mark. I think 260, 270 sounds about right. Hopefully the walk rate stays where it was at, if not, or if it even improves. But I don't know what he's going to give you in the stolen base category, and RBIs and runs are going to be hampered by the platoon issues. I guess the ceiling is moderate and the floor is extremely low, but I'm still in on Mazara for this year, and especially long term.
What about you, Mike? What do you think about Mazara this year?
Bold prediction, Nomar Mazara is worthless in 12-team mixed leagues.
Wow, I can agree with that, though. That was about to be my take, kind of. I wasn't going to go that far, but I can get on board with it. Tell us why.
I really don't get the excitement. Yes, he's young for his age. Young for his age.
Young for his age, really.
Young.
Such
he's
a young
22-year-old. He's the youngest.
Like Harold, that reminds me of Harold Reynolds at the draft. He said, what do you say about Will Benson? He goes, oh, he... For an 18-year-old or for a 17-year-old, he was hitting better than younger 17-year-old. Or he said something that didn't make any sense. It was I got to find it, but
no need to be mean to Mike. Okay, jeez, people say the wrong thing sometimes. Jesus.
No, I'm just messing with him. He knows that.
All right, let me rephrase that. He was young for his levels. Yes, anytime a 21-year-old can hit respectably at the major league level, that's very exciting in the long term. However, minor leagues, major leagues, he still hasn't really shown a whole lot to get excited about other than the fact that he's been young. Look at all of his isolated power numbers. They haven't been anything to write home about. It's always been, oh, well, since he's done this and he's so young, this means that he's going to be great and really improve. Well, when is that going to actually happen? So the issue here is that he doesn't steal any bases. That's issue number one. Number two, he just posted a 16.4% homer per fly ball ratio, but that was a fluke because his ex home run per fly ball ratio was just about 12%. So that home run per fly ball ratio is probably going to come down unless he really ups that power this year, which, hey, he's young. Maybe it happens. I doubt it. He also gets shifted a lot. 50% of his balls in play, he got shifted, and he pulled a bunch of grounders into that shift, meaning he's not going to be a great BABIP guy, and you don't know if he's really going to play against lefties, and he's probably going to hit toward the bottom of the order.
Something so that I think goes behind that point, too, is that he hit like 240 from July on. So maybe after the, you know, kind of brilliant beginning of the season that he had, maybe teams kind of saw, oh, he's pulling the ball a ton. We're going to shift him. And that maybe, you know, maybe is the reason that he hit so low in the batting average department. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, and also one last point is that he doesn't hit enough fly balls. He actually
– literally just going to say that.
Yeah, a sub 30% fly ball rate. It's not really the mark of a power hitter unless you're Christian Yelich. I mean, obviously that means that there's upside. If he can get that fly ball rate into the 35 to 40% range, then that'll boost his power numbers. But it's usually pretty stable batted ball type distribution. So if you're only hitting 30% fly balls, you're probably going to continue to be in that region. And that's going to cap his upside in home runs.
Yeah, he also had a Christian Yelich-esque 55% ground ball rate from July on last year. And his contact went down. He went down to a 26% strikeout rate after starting off in the 18% range. So the batting eye is going down a little bit as the season went on. He started to hit more ground balls. It was obviously going into the shift, which affected his batting average, and the home run to fly ball rate wasn't real. I completely agree. I'm just not in on Mazzara for this year. I don't want to sit here and say that he isn't projectable because I love the guy long term. I think that he does have 30 home run projection on him. I mean, he hit 20 last year in 560 at bats. It wasn't necessarily true. But I think that 30 is in the cards for him in his career. I'm just not buying him for this year. There's guys going behind him. I would gladly buy a Yasiel Puig repeat. I would take Gerard Dyson just for the speed alone. I would take a guy like Max Kepler, who's not on our list, but I think is very comparable in skill set to Nomar Mazzara, but actually is going much later. And there's other options too. But anyway, what are you laughing about, Mike?
I'm laughing because you brought up Kepler, and you're like, there's very comparable skills there. And my answer, I'm thinking, is yeah, both guys I don't like.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I think they're very comparable in the sense that I'm not really targeting them for this year, but I have my eye on whether they progress in certain areas. If they progress as the season goes on, they might be buying opportunities in keeper leagues. They also might be buying opportunities for next year as well if the price doesn't get inflated like Christian Yelich. But, you know, I think that that's – I was wondering what you were laughing about. I was
like, there's a lot to like about Mazzara long term, though. I know we're kind of berating him for the short term, but that under 20% strikeout rate, like, again, being so young in the major leagues at that age is crazy. It's really impressive, but again, I mean, he needs to change the actual batted ball profile, like you guys have all touched on. He needs to hit more fly balls, and I worry him doing that might affect that K percentage. So it's a really big year for Mazzara's development. It's actually going to be this year, I think. Definitely have to see which direction he swings, because it's a buying opportunity in keeper dynasty, because I think he's more of a steady Eddie kind of guy you can put in your lineup and not worry about it for the next 10 years, something like that, if that's what you want to do. But I don't think the ceiling is as lofty as it was perceived to be either.
Yeah, well, I find it weird too, because he has a pretty, you know, league average-ish speed score, and the Rangers just don't steal him. They do not, you know, give him the opportunity to steal. So I find that to be kind of a alarm sounding off in my head. Like, why are they not allowing him to try and steal bases? And I think the biggest thing is against lefties. You know, I mean, last year he just was hideous against lefties. If he starts to be a platoon guy, which makes sense, and since they do have a guy like Ryan Rua that can play, Delino DeShields is a righty that could use him against left-handers as well. There's a lot of things kind of going against Mazzara this year. I think that there's just other gambles that you can take. Absolutely. Let's move on to our next guy. And this is probably, if people are listening to this to listen to you specifically, Podhorzer, I think it's because they want to know exactly why you love Keon Broxton so much. So why don't you just take 5 minutes. I'm going to go off and drink a cup of coffee for a second. Just talk about Keon Broxton for a while and what you think about for this year.
Well, let's state it for the record that no, I do not love Keon Broxton. He just so what happened is because I screwed up and in a panic move, I ended up drafting him and now I'm biased. And so I kind of am convincing myself that I love Keon Broxton.
Don't convince yourself. I mean, actually love him. Well, yeah. How about this? So, obviously his walk rate is better. So I'm assuming in OBP formats, people will be targeting him more, but in terms of your expected BABIP metric and, the expected home run to fly ball rate, what are those telling you about Broxton for this year? Like, do you think, A, he gets a full season of at-bats, first and foremost, or do you think he plays himself out of a job because of the contact rate being so bad? I mean, it was 57% last year and 200 at-bats. So, I mean, there's a lot of, little things that kind of interwork in somebody like Broxton here. But at the same time, the Brewers aren't going to be good. They have every opportunity to give Broxton a long leash and let him kind of do his thing. So I am very interested in what you think the actual stat line might end up being for somebody like Broxton this year.
Yeah. Okay. All jokes aside, Broxton's basically half season last year was fascinating. Out of nowhere, .373 BABIP, 25.7% home run per fly ball rate. All
yeah.
Fantastic. And that came along with a nearly 15% walk rate, Joey Votto-esque, and a 36% strikeout rate. It's like literally every stat, he's at the extremes. And you don't see this very often, and especially for a player that we literally had two major league plate appearances for him before this year. So we have very little data to work with. And he didn't exactly tear up the minors, so we know very little about him. And he's already 26 years old. So naturally, fantasy owners are wondering, what the heck is Keon Broxton going to do this year? So let's start with the BABIP. He posted a .373 actual mark. Guess what his ex-BABIP was? Oh, .320, .330? No, it was actually .381.
Oh, wow.
That's right. Wow. That's right. It was higher than his actual BABIP, and it was the second highest mark in all of baseball on my spreadsheets.
Wow.
Wow.
So why is that? He did everything that ex-BABIP likes. He hit a ton of line drives. He avoided the pop-up. He only hit one pop-up all season long. He also showed very good speed. He hit the ball extremely hard, and he was rarely shifted. Add that all together, and you get a .381 BABIP. So, yeah, of course I'm going to expect some regression in BABIP. You still have to expect it. But this guy is a legit high BABIP guy. And you see all of the projection systems. Steamer's at .315. Zips is at .325. Guess what, folks? They're not looking at the same metrics as I am. They're not projecting batted ball distribution like I am. So they don't know that he's capable of such a high BABIP. And all throughout his minor league career, he posted inflated BABIP marks as well. So I'm surprised that Steamer, who definitely does use minor league stats, isn't projecting a higher mark. I'm actually projecting a .345 mark. And that sounds like, but Mike, he posted a .381 BABIP. Yeah, well, a .345 mark is like 11th highest of all of my hitter projections. And this is a guy with only 230 plate appearances at the major league level. So yeah, that's pretty bullish.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, hitters make their own BABIPs. So, over the course of time, you can kind of average out somebody's BABIP over the course of 7 years and get a nice, at least, baseline of what their BABIP might actually be for that season. But somebody like Broxton, I think that's crazy that was over .380 because, that just doesn't happen. I'm trying to find the BABIP leaders for last year under 200 plate appearances. Tyler Naquin was at .411. David Dahl was at .400. Trey Turner, of all people, was at .388. But Keon Broxton was sitting there at number 11 overall in terms of BABIP for last year with players minimum 200 plate appearances. And it seems to me like that's kind of rightfully so. So, I mean,
yeah.
If you're penciling in, even if you're being, pretty kind in terms of a regression there, which I think you are. I mean, if you're... say you gave him the same BABIP as last year, that's still not outrageous. You know, I mean, it's based on the fact that his expected BABIP was at 380. I keep on saying BABIP a lot, so I'm just going to turn it over to you, Matt, and tell me how you feel about Broxton for this year, because I know last year you were kind of high on what he was doing in a short sample size, which was impressive. Between August and September, might I add, he had 7 home runs and 15 stolen bases, just to put that out there.
Yeah, he won a lot of leagues for guys that picked him up on the waiver wire, that's for sure.
But what are you at with him for this year in 5x5 and in OBP formats too?
OBP, obviously, with the he gets a severe bump. I mean, he mentioned the Joey Votto-esque walk rate. That's Joey Votto-esque, which means it's damn near top of the board. He's a really interesting player for me. I'm not going to go as much in depth as Mike Potholzer did with the projection, but looking at somebody like me, I kind of use comps as a rough projection. I don't like you take bits and pieces of players and stuff like that. He's a really tough player to find a comparable guy to. Just because, like Mike Potholzer said, everything is so extreme here. I do think the Brewers' batting order is going to be really, really good for fantasy realm. And I read it actually from Potholzer's article on Fangraphs that he wrote about a week and a half ago about the projection of actual Keon Broxton. There's a tweet from the Brewers beat writer from Craig Counsell. They want to hit him second, or they want to hit him in the top 3 spots in the order. If he can say he hits second, right in front of Braun and what we think Eric Thames can be, that's a good spot to be. And I know with the Brewers, they run like crazy more than anybody else. That's a thing that we need to track here as well, because obviously he showed that. The one thing I am worried about is he's twice traded, Arizona to Pittsburgh and then Pittsburgh to Milwaukee, and nothing in return by either one of those two teams. So, I mean, obviously he's kind of a late pop-up guy here. I don't even – the Brewers, if you ask the Brewers what they have, they probably couldn't even tell you with Broxton. He was a center fielder, really good. I don't know. He looked okay by the eye test. I don't know what the defensive metrics actually say out there. But he hits the ball really hard. Like I said, a little good speed. Hits the ball in the air, a lot of line drives. Obviously, like again, it's runs and RBIs are going to be batting – or where he's at in the order. He's definitely going to steal. If he stays healthy, I have no issue with him stealing 30, projecting him to be a guy that's going to get 30 bags. I think home runs, I think Mike's about right with 14, 15-ish, right around that area. And I like him. I have him pegged as a nice value, especially in OBP formats. In OBP formats, if I'm going to draft and I don't walk out of the draft room with Cam Broxton, something went horribly wrong, because he's a guy I'm actively trying to get in OBP formats, and I think everyone should be.
Isn't he essentially Jonathan VR with a couple of fewer steals?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah but I think VR's floor is higher. I think Broxton has such a wide range of outcomes realistically. He's a lot harder to predict. Does that make sense?
We definitely have less data on Broxton to go by, but in terms of overall skill set, excellent walk rate, strikes out a lot, has both power and speed. Mm-hmm. And legit high BABIP skills for both of them.
VR and Broxton 1-2 in the order in front of Braun and Thames is going to be pretty nice.
And you know what? I own both of them in labor mix, so go Brewers!
You want to know what would kick Broxton into the top like 5 rounds of fantasy is if he cut that strikeout rate to like, you know, somewhere in the 30% range. And hit, you know, batting average wise, hit somewhere in the 260 range, and you know, say he stole like 35 plus bags this year and had 20 home runs. That would kick him into the top 5 rounds, absolutely.
I'm a big proponent though, or I have the opinion you just can't cut the strikeout rate without it affecting the rest of your game. So I don't really want him to do that.
Well,
I think he's fine.
Still
how
walks,
he
and Milwaukee will again lead the league in stolen base attempts per game by a wide margin, in my opinion, because Milwaukee loves to steal.
Oh, sure.
And I think that that's another thing going for him. For DFS purposes, anybody that plays DFS, last year, talking about BABIPs too, against lefties, he had almost a 480 BABIP against left-handed pitchers in 83 at-bats, almost hit 290 against them as well. The Brewers have him penciled in for number 2 right now in the order based on roster resource, but I can't say definitively that he's going to hit number 2. I'm projecting him to be somebody that hits, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of 240 to 250. And then on top of that, having somewhere in the 15 to 12 range of home runs and then 30 plus bags. And I think that that's absolutely valuable in fantasy. There's a lot of things that could go right and maybe pump that projection up a little bit. There's also a lot of things that could go wrong. He did have an off-field incident last year towards the end of the season or in the offseason, maybe, that kind of sounds the alarms off for me as well. So there's a lot of things that can happen with him. But I think we can all agree that he's a very exciting player and somebody that we certainly need to watch as this season goes on, because he could take a massive step forward, or he could kind of just be completely off fantasy radars going into next year as well. So let's talk about a guy, number one prospect, former number one prospect, Byron Buxton. I think a lot of people are starting to value him higher than I'm willing to, based on a September in which he hit 277. He had 7 home runs and a stolen base in that time, and the fact that he has such high prospect pedigree. I think a lot of people are starting to come aboard the bandwagon and pick somebody like Byron Buxton. Right now he's going somewhere in the 145 range overall, which is the 34th outfielder off the board. Mike, what are you thinking about Buxton for this year? Is he somebody that you're liking?
I think fantasy owners are silly. Come on. That September came with a 33.6% strikeout rate and a 370 BABIP. And I'm sure all the listeners would be like, but Mike, you love Keon Broxton. That's very Broxton-esque.
Yeah. Well, he's going later than Byron Buxton as well. Very, very comparable name. Sorry.
Yeah. The thing with Buxton is that he was such a source of stolen bases in the minors, and we expected him to steal a lot of bases because he's really good speed. He only attempted 12 steals in a little more than half of a season, which equates to maybe 15 to 20, I think we expected a lot more speed from Buxton. The power was probably better than we thought, and he's going to show us Broxton-esque power, but the speed just wasn't there. He strikes out a ton, and heading into the offseason, I assumed that he was going to bat at the bottom of the order. Now it seems like maybe he's going to get a shot at the top of the order. But how long is that really going to last? I'm projecting him for a 290 on base percentage, and the other projections aren't much better than that. Of course, the fans are more optimistic, but Steamer and Zips are right around the 300 mark as well. There's no way a guy with a 300 on base percentage is going to last at the top of the Twins order when they have reasonable alternatives. So I wouldn't get too excited that he opens the year at the top of the order. Yeah, he should probably provide some power and speed, but if he gets dropped back to the bottom, then it's going to be a much worse version of Keon Broxton.
Matt, you're our prospect guy. Do you think that Buxton can take the next step this year?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting with looking at what he did last year between AAA and Major League. Obviously, you can't just do this math, but in 100 and what's the quick math here? 141 games and roughly 480 at-bats. You hit 21 home runs combined between AAA and Major Leagues and stole 17 bases. That's nice. But again, the question with this comes the walk rate. It completely eroded in the Major Leagues. It didn't exist. And that's the separation between Broxton and Buxton is the OBP. I do think that they're kind of similar in a lot of the raw numbers. Not how they get to them, obviously. But the raw numbers are similar. And he had a very nice September after getting sent down and coming back up. But a lot of people don't put a lot of stock in September at-bats, and I can see the point, because you're facing a lot of AAA pitchers that are earned the call-ups and all that stuff. So, I mean, you can't hold September at-bats the same way as you hold May or June at-bats. So does that make sense? Like, you have to downgrade them at least a little bit, especially with one of the Twins playing them there. But I will say Buxton is going to have value no matter what in AL only leagues, just because he's going to play every day because the defense is so good. He probably has a floor of 12 to 15 homers and 15, 18 steals, but you really can't predict anything else. The batting average is probably going to be bad, but you really don't know for certain. Don't know what the runs are going to look like, because obviously you don't know where he's going to hit in the order. And obviously the OBP ties into that. RBIs, you can probably safe bet he's not going to have too many of those. So I think the 15-15 roughly is a good floor, but you just don't know what else you're going to get. It's batting average could literally be anywhere with his speed and everything. I'm not expecting much. I if he hits higher than 250, I'd be shocked this year, I think. I still do like him long term, but I wish Minnesota would kind of just – they're not going anywhere – just let him play every day and build your team around him.
Yeah, I'm not in for this year, and it's the simple fact of, first off, he hasn't been healthy throughout any time in his career, really, at this point. And then on top of that, he just can't walk yet in the major league. The plate skills aren't ready for him to be a fantasy asset. So I'm just going to keep it simple and say that I'm not willing to, you know, draft him right now, especially where he's going. He's just going way too high for 1 month. And even in that month, like you already alluded to, Podhorzer, it's just not enough in terms of the plate skills for me to believe that he can extrapolate that to being a, you know, top 150 pick in fantasy. I think people are just going to be blinded by the fact that he was such an elite prospect that they're just not going to be able to get over it. So let's talk about the last, and we're going to kind of make this a versus thing, because I am in love with Lorenzo Cain for this year, and this is very different from me last season, where coming into the year I was just saying he is going way too high in drafts and the health isn't good enough. I just can't get on board with Cain. This year, I'm completely changing my tune, and I think that he's an absolute bargain where he's going. And I have him against Andrew Benintendi. So I kind of just wanted to do this exercise with you guys and, you know, see who you guys would choose out of these two based on any settings, you know, based on either draft cost or skill set or, you know, whatever you guys wanted to make it about. But either way, I'll start off with you, Matt. Who do you like more between Lorenzo Cain and Andrew Benintendi for this year? You're on mute. Or you're not here.
Sorry about that. I am on mute. Yep. No, you're right. I started out with saying I'm going to go with the guy you don't think I'm going to say, and it's Lorenzo Cain for me. I don't think it's really that close for this year.
You've seen the light.
Yeah, I just don't see Benintendi, to me, for this season, is an outfield version of what you can get from Dansby Swanson. And while that is good, that's not great. And from a fantasy aspect, I'll go with Lorenzo Cain, who is guaranteed to be hitting in the middle of an order. Might not be the best batting order, but he's going to hit in the three spot. He's going to run. I don't see any reason why Cain doesn't steal at least 20 bags. Assuming health, obviously, that's the only reason. So I'm going Lorenzo Cain. I love Benintendi long term. He was my number one prospect in fantasy baseball, but I just don't think the ceiling is that high for this year, and that's what we're talking about right now.
Mike, are you choosing between these two guys and why?
Cain is easy for me. I totally agree with Matt on... Actually, I love that comparison to Dansby Swanson. It's kind of like, does a little bit of everything, but nothing stands out.
Yep.
And so it kind of mutes the excitement. However, because he was a top prospect, it's not going to mute the excitement, and everybody is going to be falling over themselves to draft Benintendi. Don't forget, he has zero plate appearances at the AAA level. And it's a lot harder for hitters to go directly from AA and succeed in the majors than it is for pitchers. So that's a serious issue. He showed very limited home run power at the major league level last year. He struck out a lot more than he did in the minors. I love him long term because of what he's done in the minors. Great contact rate. He's got power. He's got speed. I think he'll be really good long term. But this year, I feel like Benintendi's upside is basically the base case for Lorenzo Cain. So I don't really see any argument whatsoever in drafting Benintendi, though I'm reading now that apparently John Farrell is considering hitting Benintendi third in the Red Sox lineup, which I think is absurd. Like, I don't know why a guy with all of 118 plate appearances is already going to be the number three hitter for a very good team in a very good lineup. That makes no sense to me. But that would obviously massively boost his value.
Hot take that Red Sox batting order is going to be extremely overrated this year. I think it's people are completely underestimating what David Ortiz did last season. And to go into the season replacing him with Mitch Moreland and making no other changes is kind of absurd.
Are they not the same two hitters, David Ortiz and Mitch Moreland?
They're kind of close, but
yeah.
I think the real difference is just their name. Other than that, I think they're exactly
one
the same.
One guy's head and ego is a lot bigger than the other's. That's it.
But the other risk with Benintendi is he's a lefty, and they still have Chris Young, the hitter.
He's going to play, too. He's going to play.
And Young, he's not going to take at bats away from Jackie Bradley. He's not going to take at bats away from Mookie Betts. So where are they going to come from? I mean, it's got to be that.
So Benintendi's at risk of losing at bats to left-handers, and that obviously is going to reduce his counting stats. So as usual, hot young prospect. He's going to be overvalued in fantasy.
Yeah, and to just kind of piggyback off that, I'll say this, you know, you don't know me that much, Mike, but I'm a massive Rays fan, and I despise the Red Sox and pretty much everything that they stand for. So the fact that they have another rising prospect in Benintendi just, you know, really kind of hurts my feelings in a way. But I am going to be realistic here, and I think that Benintendi is a quality player. I do think that for fantasy this year, he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be, you know, a double-digit home run stolen base guy, probably a pretty decent batting average. But I do think playing time will be a concern, especially against lefties. And the only reason I matched him up against Lorenzo Cain is because they're literally going right next to each other in NFBC drafts, 130 and 131. So, you know, with me on Cain, I think that you have to feel okay about him playing not really a whole season, but like, you know, 4/5 of a season. And if he does that, based on the fact that Kansas City has been continuously in the top 3 or the top 10 in stolen base attempts per game over the last 4 or 5 years here, I think that we can feel pretty good about his stolen base floor. The power numbers might not repeat from 2015, but I do think he's a, you know, 10 to 13 home run guy with 25 plus stolen bases and always a strong batting average. And that's what you're going to get with somebody like Cain. And he's going, you know, at a very affordable price compared to last year. With Benintendi, he's had a strong spring, and I think a lot of people, especially people that are watching spring games and watching Benintendi, are getting even higher on him. But I've already went on my Boston Red Sox lineup tangent a few episodes ago. I think that Dave Ortiz not only statistically was the backbone of that offense, but just from a, you know, an attitude perspective, he just brought everybody else up. They don't have a true leader on this team anymore. Hanley Ramirez isn't a leader. Man, Dustin Pedroia, I guess, could be looked at like that, but I don't expect to stay healthy, and I just don't think he is as good as he was last year based on the fact that he, you know, was really, again, piggybacking off a lineup that had Dave Ortiz just going absolutely ham. Maybe steroid induced, maybe not. It's, you know, maybe I don't know what happened last year, but either way, I think that it's a pretty easy case to make that Cain is better than Benintendi here. But I think in a lot of drafts, we'll see Benintendi possibly going ahead of Cain. And, you know, I think that as fantasy owners, you might be able to take advantage of that. So anything else you guys want to add on these two? I guess not. No?
No, you said it all.
Oh, man.
We covered every possible angle.
I think we did too.
Yeah. My interesting question is, if Benintendi played for the Tampa Bay Rays, how much hype would he be getting right now? And I don't mean that to be a slight against you, Mike. I'm just saying it because I think it's the Red Sox. The Red Sox bump is kind of a little out of control.
Yeah, I can agree in a way. I mean, I think the thing that I need to focus on more is that there's so many Boston fans out there that I need to, like, pump the brakes on disgracing some of their guys. So I'm going to try to do that. But anyways, Mike, thank you very much for coming on. We really appreciate you. Brought a lot of really good stuff here. Once again, let everybody know where you can be reached out on Twitter, all of your social media stuff, and all the stuff going on in your world right now.
Yeah, on Twitter, it took a while for me to come up with a very clever username. It's Mike Podhorzer.
Awesome.
So, That wasn't taken?
Yeah, surprisingly... Twitter was all set to give it to me, and they were that happy to give me that username. I didn't have to battle anybody for it. I didn't have to pay anybody to take that name over. So surprisingly, it was not in high demand. So I took it, and it was free. It's great. You could also find me on the Rotographs blog at fangraphs.com, and of course, buy my stuff, projectingx.com.
Yeah, once again, I highly recommend doing that. It really helps out in terms of you wanting to make your own projections. And that's a really strong thing to do each and every season. It really gives you a nice kind of baseline of what everybody's going to do. And, you know, I think also your metrics that you're adding this year is really, really fascinating and interesting. I can't wait to see how that kind of progresses. It's really good and fascinating stuff. So, again, appreciate you coming on. And we'll probably meet you in New York. I mean, that's if we... You know, I don't know how many people go to these Tower Wars things, but I'm assuming we'll be able to bump into each other at some point.
That's you're assuming the city's still on the map after this weekend.
Yeah,
so.
After the 19 foot blizzard.
I'm going to be under 3 feet of snow by then, so I will not be able to make it.
Hopefully the plane can land. I mean, it can land on snow, right? Is that a problem? Or
it's soft and cushy, is what I heard. So,
Matt, where can people reach you on Twitter, and what are you up to nowadays?
MD Tomp, FWFB. I listen to the Prospect Pod with Mike and Andy on Wednesdays. And I think it comes out on Wednesdays. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, other than that, watching baseball, watching the WBC right now, Venezuela and Italy. Good game, I guess. And yeah, waiting for the season to start, counting down the days.
Matt, you had the tough task of deciphering between Mike Podhorzer and Mike Werner the whole episode, so I give it up to you for not really messing it up much.
why I kept calling Mike Podhoser by his whole name. So. I don't know why I did that. I chose the more difficult one to use the full name, but that's okay.
Well, unlike Mike Podhoser, I couldn't get my own Twitter name by itself. I had to add an FWFB at the end of it. So you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB because some asshole on Twitter has my regular name already, which is messed up. You can also check out all my stuff on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. You can check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com this season. Like Matt said, you can check out the prospect show. And yeah, for Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening and good luck in your drafts. Every night I get you on the tail.